For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
The first thing that I have to say is a big thank you to Xenos. The Xenos has meant more to me than, only God knows really how much Xenos you have meant to me. This church has been the part of my conversion at 32 years old. I came from an atheistic house. It's been a part of my edification, and I was never allowed to come to Xenos for various reasons. So I used to get the tapes and listen to them in my car as I drove to work and back. So now I'm able to attend Xenos on a regular basis, and I love it. But not only has Xenos played that big a role and then transformed my family's faith, and now I have a family that, you know, knows the Lord, it has a very specific impact on my mission in life. So I'm going to describe that to you today. And I'm not going to go super deep into human trafficking and how to recognize a victim, all that, because we don't have time for that today. I'm going to talk a very, very narrow focus today. But this whole thing started out as my daughter's fault. I was a guy who believed that there was a God and believed that all this stuff, you know, you should do this. I read Walking in Victory like 6 times, Dennis McCallum, you know. I listened to every tape, you know. I got involved in Bible study, but I never felt that thing that, you know, people would preach about and people would talk about. It just never, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, well, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and it always felt like work. Has anybody ever felt like that, you know, with your ministries, you know? As a matter of fact, I even got terminated from the worship team at my church, you know? So I was a classic failure, ministry failure. So I read this book, Purpose Driven Life. Have you ever read that book? Okay, so I read that book, and that book tells you how to have a purpose, and it tells you how to get involved, and it's got a personality test at the end, and, you know, I took all those, and that's why I joined the worship team, because I love music and all that stuff, you know, and boom, I'm not good at any of it. So then I thought that, well, maybe I ought to try teaching this to my daughters. If I'm not going to get it, you know, by the time I'm done, which it doesn't look like I'm going to, maybe I ought to pass it on to my daughters. So I had these mandatory meetings with them when they were about 11 and 13 years old. And we were going to meet, and I was going to teach them this book every Sunday night before dinner. Doesn't that sound like fun? I thought this would be a great idea, and then I would do something to be a good dad that they would remember forever, you know, and they were not feeling it at all. And I couldn't understand it. As a matter of fact, my youngest daughter, a very brilliant girl, was doing things to obstruct my teaching. And I remember one night, she had this notepaper that I'd provided for her with no notes on it, you know, and a pen which I'd provided for her, and she was using the pen that I'd provided for her to tap on her paper with no notes on it while I was trying to teach. Finally, anger got the better of me, and I said, Michelle, what is your problem? And she goes, you know, Dad, you know, you're teaching all this purpose stuff, and this week and that week, I get all that stuff, but what's your purpose in life? Can you feel that thing I feel right now? You know that little conviction spot right here? It's like right in there. You're going, oh. So I faked it, right? I faked it. I said, well, you know, hey, sweetheart, my purpose is to be the best judge for God that I can be, to be a light up on the bench, to attract people that they're going to want to say, gosh, I wonder what he has. I want that. And then I'll be able to tell them about Jesus Christ. All right, so I lied to my own daughter. So bottom line on all that is I felt guilty, and I went upstairs, and I was getting ready for bed, and I said a quick prayer. I said, God, you know, I got this job as a judge, and I got this family. I said, but, you know, I'm bored with my job. I do no ops cases and traffic light tickets all day long, you know. I said, if there's any way I can be significant for you in my work, can you show that to me? Just figuring it was one of those another unanswered prayers. You know what I'm saying? You just throw it out there and see if it's going to stick. So along the line, and that's how I started to formulate my ideas, and I got to meet Bev DeLashmet, who threw kerosene on my ideas and was very encouraging with along with my mentor, and I didn't. She will never hopefully divulge how ignorant I was at the beginning of all this. Hopefully, she'll take that to the grave. But I was like, so I was super failure turned into super significance. I came to church one day. I don't know why I came to Xenos one day. And Gary was teaching. And I don't know why he was teaching on this subject. You know, I have no idea all these circumstances that were happening. But he gave this talk. And I felt like I was the only one in the room. You've been there. You know where you're like, dude, the dude is talking to me. And he gave one of his brilliant, talks. And so today I'm going to talk about prostitution. Because the talk that he gave and the Bible parable I'm going to talk about is on the issue of prostitution. Even though most of you don't really focus on that, most of you focus on, he who loves little, is forgiven little and all that stuff, right? But one of the main characters of the story is a prostitute. I'm going to talk a little bit about human trafficking. I feel I do have one slide that I want you to take home with you, and you're going to talk about it tomorrow at the barbecue, I promise. You're going to be sitting around going, hey, let me tell you about this, okay? And then all I can say is the ending is going to be wow. I was preparing this last night, and I said, I can't put a label on the end of this thing because I just think it's wow. So let's dig right in. I'm kind of doing this because this is what all the Xenos teachers do, so I'm trying to be somewhat, hey, I got C's all the way through Christian Principles. I barely passed, So really, it's kind of a joke that I'm doing a Xenos thing. But there is a story about Jesus and a prostitute and a Pharisee in the Bible, and it's in the last story in Luke 7. It's Luke 7:36. If you don't have a Bible, you can read along with me. Oh, I feel so cool saying that. Right? So hey, one day this Pharisee invited Jesus to have dinner at his house, right? Jesus went to the Pharisee's house, and a woman of the town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she went in there with an alabaster jar of perfume. Now, I used to think, and I don't know if any of you used to think, that God picked the worst person he could possibly pick to point out the dichotomy between, society as a Pharisee and, how bad a person can really be. Anybody ever read, when they read that story, anybody ever read it kind of like that, right? Like this, like the sinful woman, like if she's a woman and she's sinful, so how could anything get any worse than that, right? Yeah, I'm not a misogynist, but I might have been. I don't know. So then this woman comes in, and as she stood behind him weeping, she began to cry on his feet with her tears, and she wiped them off with her hair. She kissed him and poured perfume on them. And Gary does such a great job of going through this. I encourage you to go back and find his lecture on this. He just does a brilliant job, but I don't have time to focus on that. But the Pharisee that invited him saw this. He said to himself, oh my gosh, if this guy was a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is. She is a sinner. Oh, he's grossed out. He's like, ew. He can't be the Messiah if he's letting her around him. Horrible. So Jesus said, hey, dude, I got something to tell you. Tell me, teacher. And then he goes through the whole money deal, right? And I don't even like it right now because it's not the focus of my thing, but it's that whole thing like one guy lends one dude 50 and the other guy 500, and then the money lender forgives them both, and who's going to love more, right? And Simon says, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. You're right, Jesus says. Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You didn't give me any water to wash my feet off. She cried on my feet with her tears and then wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, but this woman couldn't stop kissing my feet. And I love the way Gary describes feet back in those days. you know, walking through the camel dung, you know, and he hadn't had them washed, so Jesus' feet were probably pretty gross. And I will tell you that I did some research, and this is the only place in the entire Bible where someone kisses someone else's feet. Unless it's Old Testament, when they made their enemies come before them and kiss their feet because it was so disgusting. Gary didn't throw that one in there, so I'm adding that one to... in case you're watching, Gary. So, where was I? Kissing the feet. Therefore, I tell you, her sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. But whoever been forgiven little, loves little. He says, your sins are forgiven. They said, hey man, who's this dude? And then he turns to her and he says, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Man, there's so much in that that I love to talk about, but I'm just going to talk about what I heard out of all that. The main things I heard. So, how much I am like the Pharisee. This particular day, Gary described the Pharisee as a man, who goes to work every day and wears a robe. How close is that? He described this guy as a man who, when he gets to work, he probably has a reserved space for his camel. He's a man that sits back and administers justice according to the law and decides the disputes of the people of the community in which he lives. Whoa. You know, the arrow is deep inside now, right? Right? Does that sound like me every day? He also described the Pharisee's internal attitude of kind of cold and removed, and the fact that he had a position that he could be isolated from everyone else in society, and he could come and go as he pleased, and he was very powerful. Right? I mean, I'm hurting inside right now because that is my job. That's what I do. That's who I am a lot and was. So what else did I hear that day, though? You can see I found the highlighter on my PowerPoint. I heard this sentence that I'd never heard before. I glossed over it because do you see this woman? I came to your house, and then all of a sudden Jesus does the smackdown. Right? But before the smackdown happens, he turned toward the woman and he said to the Pharisee, do you see this woman? Now, do you think he just meant, I'm seeing you, like I see you, like here you are, you know, hair down, all that? This is where, I'm sorry Bev's here, because she may disagree with me on this. But I didn't hear it like that, okay? I kind of heard it from a perspective point of view. From, you know, that sentence in Mark 8, 17 through 19, where Jesus is walking along with his people, what do you call them? Disciples. And they were just asking the stupidest thing after the miracles, you know, with the loaves and all that. And he goes, guys, do you still not understand? You know, are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see? My bad. And ears but fail to hear? Gary did this just recently on questions to ask in the Bible. I'm going to challenge him to go, do you see this woman? I want him to do one on that. Or have me and I'll do it. But do you guys get the feeling what Jesus is saying about what is wrong with you numbskulls? You are blind to the truth. I'm telling you that Jesus wanted me to see this woman as he saw her. This is the lesson that I'm going to give you today. I'm going to forget about all that other stuff mostly. But I'm going to go into who this woman was and how she got to that dinner party. And then the wow factor is going to be, how did she turn out? Because God has shown that to me, and I'm going to reveal it to you today because it's the coolest thing. And how can you love her? if you are still believing the lie of our society as to what she really is. You won't be able to love her. You won't be able to talk to her. You won't be able to look her in the eye as a Christian should if you still believe the lie that the Pharisee did. Okay? So these are big points. And I, as a judge, convicted in front of Gary DeLashmet and Zenos Church, said, and I see thousands of these sinful women. Most of y'all don't have that opportunity, right? This is fitting so neatly into me. I run across over 1,000 of these women every year, and how do I look at them? So let's look at sinful women in Columbus, Ohio. And I want to say, you could take that woman right there and you could put her in that Bible story. This is how alive I want you to be. I don't want you to say, oh, it's some old book, man, it's written all these stories a long time ago. This is alive for me. This is like actually we're alive. So yes, prostitute, drugs. Prostitute, felonies, robbery. Prison, prostitute, drugs, felonies. And this is what I call the death look, folks. I bet this woman had that before she went to that dinner party. I bet that's what her eyes looked like. And once she got there, something changed inside her. And we're going to see it here live today. All right, one little aside. This girl right here had trafficking and drugs out of Athens County. If you get nothing else out of the presentation today, don't sell drugs in Athens County. It's not a cool thing, all right? She was headed to prison before we got her, okay? And don't worry. The ending, I'm going to show you how all these ladies have turned out, obviously. Prostitution, drugs. Now, check this out. This is one lady's 9-year journey through being a sinful woman, as the Bible would describe her. My God. My God, folks. That's when I first met her, was right like that. And this is a total aside, but what do you notice in each one of these pictures? Trauma. I'm just going to tell you, trauma. We don't have time for Zeke and Mouse and whatever. Trauma is all over these ladies. Whole nother topic. Whole nother day. First late photo when she got out of the juvenile system. Trauma. Late photo when she met me. Weighing 90 pounds. About 25 years later. Felon. So I said to myself, I can remember the day I said, I owe it to the people of Franklin County. This is a significant caseload of mine. I want to find out what happens to a little girl standing by the Christmas tree with her dolls. You know, what processes does she go through? What influences fall upon her? What possible things take her from that little girl to being in front of Judge Herbert, labeled a crack whore by all of us in Franklin County, Ohio? Nothing. You're no good. Do they know what kind of woman she is? She's a sinful woman. Okay, I'm going to answer that question for you, because that's what I think Jesus wants me to do. Jesus could tell us that a third of all prostitutes enter before they're even 15 years old. Now that messed with me, right? Because even though I'm a low-level judge, there's a thing about when you put that robe on, there's these fumes that waft up into your nose and you think you know everything. All the attorneys love it, right? You know? Oh, you can't tell me anything. So I had seen that movie Pretty Woman. And I knew, you know, that this was their choice. Well, this stat was really messing with the old Judge Herbert, you know. How about this one? 62% of all prostitutes enter before they're even 18 years old. That's what Jesus was telling. That's what Jesus wanted me to know so I could do this and tell you guys. Okay? What? 96% of all the juvenile prostitutes were runaways. That's almost 100% of your 62% of your prostitutes are runaways. So I asked the police, I said, what's up with that? I said, you know, what's up with all this runaway and prostitution and all this other stuff? And the police said, hey, you know, when us boys, when we run away from home, it's just because boys are stupid. Right? But when girls run away, they're running away from something. And that something is predominantly some sexual abuse in their home. This is an old, like 1980s national number from a study. The numbers that we're getting, you know, are just way, way, way higher. Like just, you know, like I can't even, so they are running away from massive sexual abuse. And I wish we had time to go into trauma, but what happens, one of the major responses to trauma is that they develop a dissociative personality type, which will innate, so they get sexually abused at a young age, and that messes with their ability to understand normal intimacy, boundaries, even to feel normal with regard to sex. And then, so they don't know how to relate. They're runaways, they're vulnerable, and they're able to separate themselves. The human being's self-defense mechanism to sexual abuse is dissociation. I can have this going on to me and I cannot be there. I can be in this car getting raped and I'm not even in this car. I've seen this time and time again. And so things I've had to learn is they dissociate when they're talking to me then, because it's a traumatic event and I'm the judge up on the bench and I look down at them. I've had to learn to talk differently. I had to learn to talk more like Jesus. He's the most trauma competent teacher we know, right? Talk about trauma competent, right? Your sins are forgiven. You're free. You know? So, sorry, I got to make sure I keep on track here because, and we got 1.6 million children are running away every year in America. That's a lot of vulnerable kids. So, undercover video. Got a lot of videos. Does anybody believe that happens? Women and girls being sold by a person. What do you call him? She's seen my presentation before. You know, I planted her. So this is the place, this is the only place in the entire slide where I'm going to go into human trafficking. But I have to say, I think you're going to love this, the way that this is developed in my mind. I hope you love it because I get really excited about this one slide. So, the Ohio law says, and if you're a lawyer, you can get CLE credit for this one slide. The law says, in Ohio, no person shall engage in sexual activity for hire. Can y'all see that? If you engage in sexual activity for hire, that's illegal under 290724, and that makes you a what? If you go out and engage in sexual activity for hire, you are a prostitute, okay? We can have no qualms about that, because that's the way the law is. Happens all the time. Let's look at the law of human trafficking. A lot of gobbledygook in here. No person shall recruit, lure, entice, isolate, harbor, transfer another, knowing that that person will be compelled to what? Do you see the same behavior in one statute that's the same behavior in the other statute? Oh, I hope your brain is popping like mine is. Because what this is saying is that you cannot be a victim of human trafficking unless you engage in sexual activity for hire, right? You have to engage in sexual activity for hire or you're not a victim of human trafficking. But what does that also say? That 100% of all human trafficking victims are also prostitutes. Okay? You need to get that. Because the movie Taken and all this, I feel so sorry for these little foreign-born girls that are chained up and drugged and sold for sex versus all those other girls that are the pretty woman they choose to do this. Now, you're a pretty smart group. I know you're saying, yeah, but Judge Herbert, there's that word right here called compelled to do it down here. And all these ladies are compelled to, and all those ladies want to do it. And I fight this every day of my mission life. Since I've been on this mission, I've been fighting this every day. So, I'll get to that next. However, what I want to do, does everybody agree with me that there has to be a commercial sex act, that you have to be engaged in prostitution to be a victim of human trafficking? Do I got that? Thanks, Bev. So this is important now. When I was in law school, I never realized how important the effective dates of statutes were till this. June 27th of 2012, that's when that became a law in Ohio. Governor Kasich signed the bill that now said, this is what human trafficking, we are defining this as a society, and this is what human trafficking is. It's a felony of the first degree. It's horrible. And felony of the first degree. Another aside, I was in a Rima court Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week. Dude came out, his neighbor's mower was on his lawn like this much. He went out and shot him in the knee. Like six times. You know, blew the guy's leg. He got charged with a felony of the second degree. Called felonious assault. Causing serious physical harm. No. This is worse than that. Mandatory 15 years in prison. So we as a society said, this is as serious as murder. On June 27, 2012. So, as a society, we put this law on the books, and it said that prostitution is a part of human trafficking, right? Let's look at the effective date of the prostitution statute, shall we? I'm trying to have a little fun with y'all. Isn't this fun? This is fun because what Jesus is telling us from this story till today is that if we as a society finally got around to defining human trafficking in 2012, and we said that prostitution is a part of human trafficking, then my argument is, isn't it possible that human trafficking's really been around as long as prostitution has? And we're just now, our eyes are just now going, do you have eyes that see? Do you have ears that hear? In 2012, right? What do you think? So that's where we get the title of the presentation today. It's really not the world's oldest profession. We think prostitution's the world's oldest oppression of women and girls. Thank you for giving me the time to belabor that point. But I think it's important because everybody gets muckety-muck. Now, well, we're going to go into this compelled element. We're going to go into this a little bit more. What I'm going to show you, which is going to be traumatic, and if you're a victim of trauma, please feel free to leave. We've got Christina Conrad over here, a licensed counselor, would be happy to sit with you and process with you. If Bev DeLashmith, counselor, would be happy to process with you. This is going to get dark and deep and ugly. But you got to know what that woman at the dinner party went through before she got there. You have to know exactly what her life was like to understand her response to the only one that could forgive her and set her free. You have to know that. And most people don't understand it. So I'm going to go there in a very, very dark way.
I look for a younger female, you know, a younger female with a backpack or something. Because the first thing I'm going to think is, okay, she's leaving home. She's leaving home for a reason. More than likely, she just got into it with her parents and she decides she wants to run away from home.
It really doesn't boil down to money. If she ended up with just the money, then it's not going to really work out. You see what I'm saying? The girl has to be so love drunk, if you will, off of me to where though she would do anything.
I make sure she has what she needs, personal hygiene, you know, take her, get her nails done, take her to buy an outfit, you know, spend time with her, you know, take her out to eat, you know, make her feel wanted, you know, but I don't give her any money.
Did you hear what I said when you called me?
Anybody feel any fear in that? Intimidation?
A quiet tear You know, it's like the jewelry, the clothes, and all that, the causes, the quack here. It do happen. It's part of the game. You know what I mean? Because you got to establish a certain thing. You got to establish some fear in that female in order to get that respect. You must establish that. And she's going to try you to see if you qualified to get that respect from her. So it's going to bring some fear. And what I'm saying is violence. You know what I mean? And it's something that don't have to take place, but it do take place because you're establishing something here that I am the one that you listen to and believe in and nobody else. And you know, like I said, when I had to fight the girl, it wasn't for money. You know what I mean? Maybe you left the stroll and I told you not to. You know what I mean? You know, when you violate certain things, you have to check them. If you do it, you know what I mean, verbally, okay. But in the pimp game, it don't necessarily work like that. You have to really put your feet down. You know what I mean? You have to really show that girl. You have to almost, if you told that girl you was going to kill her, when it comes time to fight, you have to almost tell her to beg you to say, Daddy, no, please don't kill me. It has to be that serious.
You believe there's people out like that? Run their business like that every day. Now, this is a last little, just a couple minutes here. This is some very shocking video I got from a detective in Las Vegas. This is outside of a casino. You're going to see a woman with yellow shorts in. She's going to try to get business with this guy right here, okay? And then let's watch what happens. She's a sinful woman. He says no. Turns her down. 12 minutes later, coming off the left side of your screen, this is her boss. That's tough to watch. Then I've got one more. I finally got so sick of everybody telling me what, you know, we want to help human trafficking victims. We don't want to help prostitutes. That we do a assessment of every prostitute. We took 100 prostitutes coming through Columbus, Ohio, did a human trafficking assessment on them. 92% test out as human trafficking victim as well. So why are you trying to draw a distinction? Why don't we just help all prostitutes, right? Columbus Police Department, one detective, our buddy, said, well, what you're telling me is that I should investigate every prostitution case like it's an F1 human trafficking case. I'm hoping someday where we are. I don't have time to go through this, but the other thing that God has enabled me to do on this is I do search warrants day and night. Like right now, I'm duty judge. So they're coming to my house, and I get to see what's happening to our girls in Columbus. And if you have any young girls, they're probably on this new social media site called Kick. Anybody have any young daughters or know any young girls? You guys hear of Kick, some of you younger folks? All right, so Kick is like the new Facebook. Bad things are going on there. Mom had a cell phone on the counter. She was making dinner. Up pops a message on Kick. It's child pornography. She calls the police. Police come to my house. Say, we need to go find out who's on the other end of that. I signed the search warrant. They go find out 28-year-old guy just out there trolling for 12, 13-year-old girls. For sex slavery. So I go through this whole thing about how to, you know, watch out for older boys and all that. But we really don't have time for that today. I can't do that with you. This is kind of interesting, though. I went on Amazon.com and bought the book Pimpology, 48 Laws of the Game. Took it with me on vacation down to the old folks' home down in Florida, you know. But check this out. This is their mission statement. I'm hoping I'm stirring some righteous anger inside of all of you, like is brewing inside of me right now. And then this is going to be the end of the trauma portion, and then I'll have to kind of zip through the exciting wow conclusion. You don't need the lights on this one, Kathy. I think this one's fine. But this is kind of one girl's amazing story.
From school, I excelled. I was on the honor roll. The principal was on the roll. I was like an overachiever. I ran track. I ran for student body president. I wrote a book on drugs and its effects, and I won a Young Authors Award. Gigi would start to take me or my little friends to roller skating or to the mall and stuff, everything. And he was like a father figure. Gigi was there and sometimes. And he would talk to me and take me out and like give me all these lavish gifts or do all these things for me and stuff. And then he would tell me that sex-wise, he said, you don't need to give it up for free. He would try to put in my head all these different things and how men really think and how men are. And so I would believe him. He had sex with me when I was 13. And he's a very, he uses his manhood to hurt, like break you in, I guess. Gigi's hours were from 6 in the evening to about 5:30 or 6 in the morning. The girls would bring in the money and give it to him. He was like married to all of us, I guess. That's just how they do. Everything was his.
What do you think of that? Sarah got out of prison after 16 years. The governor didn't pardon her, but commuted her rest of her sentence. So she's out. You can look her up on the internet. Quite an amazing story. So now let's turn this thing around. All right, let's get to the hope. Let's get to the good news, okay? You may want to get to the good news now. All right, what are the results? These are going to be the most complex individuals to deal with. So you as a church have adopted this cause in Catch Court, I guess, or whoever as your ministry. I think that's great because I argue this is a people group. What do you call it? Unreached people group. So that's part of your, as part of, I learned Christian principles, right? 10 years ago, unreached people group. Got to reach all the people groups. But you're dealing with PTSD, alcohol and drugs, trauma, everything up here, self-esteem, mental health, traumatic brain injury. I'm calling it human trafficking syndrome. Someday it'll be in that book, I hope. Human trafficking syndrome. But let's not talk about that because I don't have time. Solutions. This was my first solution when I first got into this. I said, let's call Clint Eastwood. Boom. That'll take care of it. But we found out that Sweden had it taken care of or had it figured out in 1999. They said, hey, why don't we develop an exit strategy for women out? We'll build up our social services and we'll go after all the buyers of sex and all the guys selling them. Isn't that brilliant? This is not being practiced anywhere in the United States of America. But I said I can start the exit strategy and go from there. Because we've got all these women, and let's start this program called Catch Court. Changing actions to change habits, which I've got to be super sly and a government official, but that's for Ephesians 4:23. Put on the new self and put off the old self, that whole for Ephesians thing. I thought that's what I might want to hear if I was in their shoes. So Catch Court, what is it? It's a 2-year, very, very intensive probation. Like, we are all up in your grill every day of your life. You have to come in daily reporting with probation officers. We have a counselor. We have all sorts of people in your grill all the time because almost every one of your decisions in the early phases has a tendency to be colored by all these lies you believe from these traffickers. We've got relationships with a lot of different people, but I'm just going to touch on those are treatment, but Freedom a la Carte is a social enterprise in town that started to help our women. Now it's a full-fledged catering company that you could hire to do any one of your corporate events or a wedding or anything. Currently they hire about 20 or 25 of our ladies I don't know. It's also another business called She Has a Name Cleaning, which will come out and clean your house. Everybody loves these women because they show up for work. They're in a good mood. They ask, can they do more? And they're awesome. They get so excited when you pay a minimum wage. They absolutely love having significance and hard work in their life. So Freedom a la Carte's one to remember. She Has a Name Cleaning is good. They hire mentor, or they don't hire, they train mentors. Kathy is one of our mentors and volunteer coordinator and all that. So we have volunteers that bring lunch in, that take women out. We do once a month we go on outings. Could be community service, could be horse riding, it could be at the Park of Roses, could be anything, could be community service. We do all that. I know I'm talking fast, but I'm running out of time. And they also, it's a pretty cool thing. So let me get to the conclusion here. So what I like to end with is this: is these are the pictures of what I saw my entire career coming through court. And I had no idea what this was going to wind up being. I had no idea what they could become. I had no idea what was going to happen. I just went ahead with blind faith, with people making fun of me, with my other judges making jokes about me. but this is what God saw. Remember that girl? She became the supervisor of the kitchen of Freedom a la Carte. I got stories about each and every one. Yeah, I'm like, hey, Becky, let's take a photograph. She climbs a tree, goes, come on, Judge Herbert. Just wonderful, wonderful spirits. Each and every one of them are just wonderful, wonderful spirits. You know, you think they know how much they've been forgiven? You think they know how much they appreciate another chance? Look at them. This was the first lady to graduate from college, and I went to the graduation. I always go to their graduation. She had all these gold tassels around her neck, and I was like, hey, Gina, what's all the gold tassels for? She's like, oh, summa cum laude, you idiot, you know? So, and I want to say, though, I want to keep pushing you back to that story, that this is how these women turned out. Like, I know how the woman, when she left, you know, Jesus said, your sins are forgiven. He didn't say, go sin no more, like he did adulterous woman. He just said, your sins are forgiven. Now this is what they're turning into. I'm a little stressed because I'm running out of time, but this is the big part of this story. This is a big part of that biblical story that I think I've been shown, that I can show you, that this is what's possible if we can all get together and help them. This is very possible. I see it every day, all day long, and you're going to get to meet one today. This is Vanessa. I changed their names to protect them, but Vanessa started out working at the, she got hired by the prosecutor's office that prosecuted her for her crimes in a victim intake role. And she got promoted 3 times. Now she's the executive assistant to the head prosecutor there. That's a very trusted position. Now remember this girl? You're not going to believe this. That's the way the woman turned out, you guys. In that Bible story, I'm arguing that we now have new evidence. She went from working at the window at McDonald's, and we'd drive through and take a picture of her. Hey, how you doing? Get our food and go on. She went to shift supervisor. Now she manages an entire McDonald's, and she's reunited with her baby daughter. It's just, these are just hundreds of beautiful stories. Jessie now. This brings up some controversy, but not with me. Jesse's transgender. Extremely vulnerable population in our society. Extremely vulnerable. She convinced me that transgenders are what they say they are. Convinced me. I had 2 years of working with her. Amazing. Barb, we kind of all know Barb, but check this out. There she is with Jane Grody, our pizza lady, and some other people getting Woman of Achievement. Remember this little girl by the Christmas tree with the dolls? She's kind of like our Freedom a la Carte part-time superhero. She goes to the jail and picks the ladies up and gives them their orientation. Hey, man, I've sat in your seat. I've been where you are. Let's go to McDonald's and grab a bite, and let me tell you what we're going to do from there. You know, it's really cool. And this is Gina and I. Everybody knows in court I love to give a one-year coin. Yeah, and that 1 year coin for Alcoholics Anonymous, it stands for 1 year free from drugs and alcohol, right? In CATSCOR, it stands for something way different. It stands for freedom from drugs and alcohol, but also people that took advantage of you and harmed you and had you in several, you know, many, many unsafe conditions. This is me giving Vivian her 6-year coin. Camera puts 10 pounds on you, I'm saying. All right. So this is almost a conclusion. So now we're going to go into catch court. You're going to see a little clip of a longer video. It's about 3.5 minutes long. This takes you in. You'll hear the women talk. And then we're going to have a real special guest to kind of close us out here.
It helped. When I looked at the traumatic stress they've been through, the depression that they're in, the homelessness, job skills, the shame and guilt that comes along with our society placing on them, I thought it would be a great challenge to try to figure out a way to treat these folks differently.
As part of that different approach, instead of once a month probation meetings, for some, they are once a day. There are weekly court hearings like this one. There is gender-specific trauma-based counseling along with drug and alcohol treatment. And there are rules, parts of town they can't go, people they can't see.
We have a curfew and we have a set time for curfew. I want everybody to tell. Where's the curfew? It's easy, right? So when the sun goes down, Tiffany goes in, right? All you have to do is someone safe. Because nothing good happens after dark, right?
Along with the restrictions comes support from those who have been there.
I know I've been there, but it tear me up. It's so much inside of me. It's tear me up.
You gotta talk about it every day. You know what, y'all, she love me. What you need from your sister?
Love.
Turn around and talk.
It's okay. Say your mind.
They are treated with decency and simple dignity.
God put a seed in your heart to look at women as women and us as women and not as prostitutes and our kids. And that's a real true honor to be looked at as a woman today.
Removed from the darkness of the streets comes the light of a new life. No longer posing for mugshots, today's photos commemorate a day of achievement, graduation day.
The women of the CATSCOR program, to know them, it will inspire you. Now, these are amazing women.
Women like Vanessa Cooper.
I'm a full-time student at Columbus State. I've been on the Dean's list, and I was recently inducted into Phi Theta Kappa.
Jennifer Evans.
I'm so proud of myself today. And I like myself today, and that's a huge thing. You know, before I was totally disgusted with myself, I mean, I prayed to God every day that God would take me, and even He didn't want me.
Yvette Graham.
I feel really privileged and blessed. To be one of the few women who took the time to give herself another chance of life. And it is worth living. We are worth living. We are worth fighting for.
Vanessa Perkins.
There are people here today who have saved my life. Today I have a purpose, a reason to live. Because today I'm a graduate of Ketch. And
along with a diploma and a photo album detailing their long journey.
And I also hand them something else. I hand them a piece of paper that dismisses and seals all their convictions. It's like, your debt's paid, you're free. And they love that.
Some of what they receive can't be quantified or spelled out on any piece of paper.
When you see that woman who's almost dead, been taken advantage of since she was 14 years old, sold into a gang, and then she becomes that. That's amazing.
Herbert is convinced, recognizing these women as victims, not criminals, providing support instead of just a jail sentence, is how you turn a victim into a survivor.
They're going to college. They're getting valid driver's licenses. They're paying taxes. They're being reunited with their family. They're giving back to their community. That's what justice ought to be about.
So look who I get to hang out with every Thursday, right? The most loving people in our community. And also I have to give a shout out to John back there, because his daughter Hannah is my director of the Catch Court program, and she's revolutionized. I have great staff, and she's the head of it. So thanks, John, for being here, and pass my thanks on to her publicly, if you will. So now we have one of our ladies who is going to be graduating on September 9th, I think it is, isn't it? Her name is Kim, and she's just an awesome woman, and she's going to take a few minutes with you just to describe her journey and kind of put it to real life for you. So please welcome Kim.
Hi.
Hi. I really didn't plan what I was going to say when I came up here, but I'm just going to let it come from the heart from God. Because without God and all the loving people in my life today, like Jeff Turber, Christina, I love Amber, you know, she's my sister, I wouldn't be standing here today. Because I was one of the women in the mugshots. I've been probably convicted over 13 facilities. I had that look in my eyes before this last time I got sentenced. I didn't want. I was so miserable. I didn't care if I lived or died at the end of my addiction. And at first, when Hannah came to talk to me, I was just a scared little girl still. Want me to come in to catch it. And at first, I kind of wanted to fight it because my addiction was still there and I didn't want to. But that moment I chose, and they accepted me in the catch court, I won't take up for anything. I've been tortured for over 9 hours, nonstop, by a man. And I always thought, since I made that choice to get into a car, or do what I did for money, that I deserved it. And then Sketch Court and all the loving people, they made me understand that I'm a human being, and I, no matter what I did, I never deserved to be violated. Like, my problem started when I was 9 or 10. I grew up in a good household. My dad was a military policeman. Probation officer got in here for juveniles. My mom was an alcoholic. I did struggle with that. But I went and stayed over at my aunt's house one night, and her husband sexually molested me. And I remember I was sleeping with my little cousin. My aunt was in her room, and he was out drinking or whatever. And I heard, and she locked him out of the house, and I heard the glass break. And it's them square panes that you have in the front door, the real thick ones. So he comes back to the room and does unspeakable things to me. With my 3-year-old cousin laying there next to me. I just held my breath until it was over. And the way her house was built, after he's done, I could see him. It was a hall like this. The room was right here, living room's right there. I could see him passed out on the couch. My aunt's room was literally right next door. And I remember I was so scared to even knock on her door. I didn't understand really alcohol or anything, or, you know, if I knocked on her door, he probably wouldn't wake up. So I went out of the house and banged on her window. Mm. And I remember this till this day, like it was yesterday. She stood me up on the toilet and wiped me off from where all the blood was, where he busted through the window. And she asked me, are you sure you just didn't start your period?
Uh-huh.
That was my aunt. And it still affects me till this day that she didn't leave me. I was 9 years old. And my dad never found out about it until a few years ago. My mom told me not to say anything because she didn't want it to affect her being able to go around her family. My mom is deceased now. I had 5 years clean when she passed away. And I just started drinking and not like the other things. You know, I just tried to hold in, you know, numb that pain that I didn't know how to deal with. And thanks to Catch Court and everything, I mean, this last relapse, I lost everything. I got sued for $25,000. I had to hold on my license. I lost custody of all my kids. I have 3 kids, a 15-year-old boy, 18-year-old girl, 3-year-old boy. My father, endless nights looking for me on the street. I had girls coming up to me with misfit numbers saying, your dad just wants you to follow him. He loves you. He always gets to hear your voice. And I remember him telling me, when he would see on the news they found an unidentified woman found dead, you know, just waiting for that name to be released. I couldn't even imagine my kids letting me do that. And I was physically killing my dad. And so at a certain point, my dad had to make it. He had to start, because every time I went to jail, he was right there. But this last time around, he said, Kim, I love you, but I can't talk to you. You have to show me that you can do this. Mm-hmm. So I had men out there that made me believe that they loved me, that they would protect me from anything, had a quota, had to make, that I was more special than the other girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that main thing, which was what I wanted, that I was addicted to these drugs. But really what started that, I think I just turned 18 years old. My son was 2, and I was with his father. And I was still suppressing in what happened to me when I was a child. He said, hey, I've got an idea of what we can make some quick money, you know, because we got an apartment in Grove City, it was like $700 a month. He didn't work, all he did was like to drink and play video games and smoke cigarettes, that's all he done. Still to this day, that's all he does. But I remember him, actually, he gave me the idea, he walked me into the strip club on South High Street, it was Juanita's, now it's the House of Babes. He walked me in there, and that's when I really started to get on the wrong path. A few months into it, I was so scared off the stage. I remember, like, I've always been a quiet person to myself, you know. I had to start sneaking alcohol and drinking and just to be able to get up on stage. Then I started thinking I was making friends. Then I started experimenting with X, with cocaine. And then he wants, my 15-year-old father wants to come in there, alligator tears, crying, saying he wants me to come home. You know, I didn't want to. I thought I was having fun and making friends. And that's where it all escalated from there for quite a few years. But through hard work and through all my support and all my trauma that I've been through, you have to feel it to heal it. I've learned that. The stuff that nobody would ever know about, I have to talk about and get it out there. it's not fun to talk about it, and it's not fun to feel it, but after I talk about it, I can heal from it. And I've learned to forgive. When that man tortured me for over 8 hours, nonstop, something just came over me, this calm, and he was sitting on the bed, and he just broke down in tears, like his eyes just turned, they were black, like he had no soul. And something just told me to go sit next to him, and I put my hand on his back and told him to forgive him. And it's only by the grace of God it paid out their life. But with all that, I've settled the lawsuit. Awesome attorney, which Catch Court helped me get. I got my license back. I got a card in my name. I worked for Freedom a la Carte, and I just got promoted from fill-in supervisor about a month and a half ago. Now I've taken over the main kitchen supervisor. Starts Monday. I have my daughter. I got my 10-year-old. So, and my 15-year-old, he was the same way. He didn't talk to me for about the first 8 months of my sobriety. I have 527 days. I run a sober living house. I'm the house manager there. And just everything's going so well, you know? I know there's always going to be bumps in the road, but I just want to spread the awareness of what's going on, you know, because there's been so many people to look at us like, oh, they're trash. I remember driving down the street with my son, this was two, right before I started dancing. I saw a girl walking down the street, a prostitute. I said, oh my God, that's so disgusting. I'll never do that. Look where I was. And look where I went. And 90% of us or more don't do it by choice.
No.
We're people. We have feelings. I actually went to a John school about a month ago, and I spoke there. For first-time offenders, they're starting to, you know, actually get the guys now instead of coming out there as girls. I had a fear in the back of my mind, like, oh my God, what if it's somebody I see, or I see that I know. But that fear went away when I went there and started talking to them. It was like, I let them know that we're mothers, we're sisters, you know, we're a child of God, you know, and we are people. We have feelings. We just been through stuff. And once I told them a bit about my story, where I was and where I came from and where I am, you know, they actually started asking me questions. They wanted to know about me. They wanted to, you know, they just, and how I got to where I'm at now, you know, and I think that was a very big moment and that made them realize, you know, that we are women and we're not a property. We are not a piece of meat to be sold. So, I think that's it. Really.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.